Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. I lost my husband almost 8 years ago. I know now in hindsight that I had been losing him for some time before that, as he found himself less and less able to connect with me through the course of our marriage. But I hadn't seen that at the time. And so when he ended our marriage, I was surprised. And as we tend to be when we're surprised, I found myself wide open to all of the feelings that came with the loss. With a lot of help and support, I resisted the desire to close off those feelings in self-protection, and I tried, and I mostly succeeded, to stay open to those feelings, to allow myself to feel the anger and the sadness and the fear and the aloneness, to risk letting them keep me company as I created a new reality for myself. So I let myself cry and scream and shake my fist. A lot of that. I talked with the people in my support network often, daily, at first. I let myself feel all those big emotions in their presence. I let them hold me when I started to lose my faith. I let them companion me when I felt so alone. That was all very hard to do. And there were many times I was tempted to go back to the old me who would have taken all those feelings, put them in a little box, come over here, and just moved on. But here is the thing. Not shutting down those feelings meant that when some measure of grace and hope and faith began to show up again in my life, I didn't have to open a box to let them in. I was able to feel appreciation for those people in my life that I leaned on so hard. I was able to feel satisfaction in how my body felt as I picked up my yoga practice and lifted those weights with the full force of my rage. I could feel the tenderness in the new ways of being a mom that came with being the only adult in the house. And eventually I could feel the return of groundedness and self-love and joy. This wasn't a linear path, of course. It was more like this rubber ball bouncing inside a giant fishbowl, hitting points of denial and acceptance and grief and joy and peace and rage over and over and over again. And now that I am mostly out of that fishbowl, I've found that I've gotten to take with me a gift. What Naomi Shihab Nye calls kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, "It is I you have been looking for," and then goes with you everywhere like a shadow or a friend. I have found so much more access to compassion for others and so much more ability to travel with them in their times of vulnerability and loss and fear, especially when that vulnerability manifests as behaviors that are hard to be around. Find myself remembering how my friends held me when I was awful and wanting to do that too. So our theme for March, as you've already heard, is the path of vulnerability. Brené Brown, the white shame and vulnerability researcher, writes in her book, Daring Greatly, "According to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, the word vulnerability is derived from the Latin word vulnerare, meaning to wound. The definition includes capable of being wounded and open to attack or damage. Merriam-Webster defines weakness as the inability to withstand attack or wounding. Just from a linguistic perspective, it's clear that these are very different concepts, and in fact, one could argue that weakness often stems from a lack of vulnerability, when we don't acknowledge how and where we're tender, we're more at risk of being hurt. I'm going to say that last thing she wrote again. When we don't acknowledge how and where we're tender, we are more at risk of being hurt. She's also said, the difficult thing is that vulnerability is the first thing I look for in you and the last thing I'm willing to show you. In you, it's courage and daring. In me, it's weakness. So my experience during that time in my life taught me that this is true, that allowing myself to be both open to the hard feelings and the people who were there to hold me, allowing myself to do that was a choice that led to growth and to courage and to kindness. And as you hear me say from this pulpit over and over again, my experience is simply that, my experience. It offers me a lot to reflect on and make meaning from, but there is so much more to how things work than my experience. Part of why we're doing that over there. Go do that over there later. Here's another perspective. Sean Ginwright is a Black author, professor, and activist. He's one of the nation's leading innovators, provocateurs, and thought leaders on African-American youth, youth activism, and youth development. His research examines the ways in which youth in urban communities navigate through the constraints of poverty and struggle to create equality and justice in their homes, in their schools and their communities. He wrote an essay called The Blues of a Vulnerability, Love and Healing Black Youth. And in that essay, he wrote this. Studies of vulnerability in general have examined a range of disabling qualities and diminished capacities resulting from a place of helplessness or shortcoming. Brené Brown came along and completely changed the game, he writes, showing us the power that can come from discovering vulnerability in our personal and professional lives. And Karen Desai, this is what I've been talking about. He continues, but I'm also mindful that there is a politics of vulnerability when working with youth. Some of us can afford to be more vulnerable than others. Power, privilege, security are all conditions that can affect who is vulnerable, the consequences of being vulnerable, and what we gain from being vulnerable in our relationships. So we also have to understand how issues of race, gender identity, social class, and power all determine the consequences of vulnerability. Or, as stated a little more directly in a recent Twitter thread by Dr. Jen M. Jackson, a columnist at Teen Vogue, having courage to finish that swim meet or ask for that big raise isn't like having the courage to be Black in a country that wants us dead. So it's one thing for me to talk about how leading with vulnerability has offered me courage and meaning, yes? And I'm not here to say that that is wrong or that it's invalid. It is real, and it's limited. When you're vulnerable because you're poor or incarcerated or not white or physically or mentally ill or disabled or queer or hold any other kind of marginalized identity, vulnerability in your relationships is only one risk among many. And some of the others have more to do with your ability to thrive and even sometimes your ability to survive. So around the same time I lost my husband, I also began to lose a sense of security I had until then taken for granted. It was the fall of 2016. Our nation took an explicit turn into the polarization that had been festering for so long. We all know what has happened since then, how COVID and other awarenesses have lifted the blinders of privilege from so many of us as we learned what the vulnerable among us have always known, that life and health and safety are not a given, that access to healthcare and human services is not equal for everyone, that some lives, yes, they do matter more than others. Layer by layer, the veils keeping me from knowing this are being pulled back. And with that, my understanding of what vulnerability is grows wider and wider. It is most certainly the thing that I lead with in my relationships as I learn to know people and meet them where they are. And it is so much more. As Adrienne Marie Brown, the queer Black writer, activist, and nurturer of emergent strategy, pleasure activism, radical imagination, and transformative justice, as ideas and practices for transformation, as she has written, things are not getting worse, they're getting uncovered. We must hold each other tight and continue to pull back the veil. And so that's what I think of as our job. As the people who we talked about so much last month, as the people who hold love at the center, our job in this world is to hold each other tight as we pull back the veil, to allow ourselves to be vulnerable to how that feels so that we can carry that vulnerability into the world as kindness, to take our own experiences of loss and turn them into kindness too, so that we might hear the cries of the vulnerable with the compassion born of our own experiences of vulnerability. And to work to make it so that risking vulnerability is a choice for all of us, a choice to make that risk and not just an outcome of anyone's identity or circumstance. I believe that as Unitarian Universalists, we are grounded in that imperative in that job to make the love that our universalist heritage calls us to embody and to act and to be. This is part of that work. Maybe so. And may we be so.